This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us today for Talk Louisiana. Emily Gunn is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. If you're dialing locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. And if you're emailing, it's talk@talklouisiana.org. Karen Fernbaugh Roy is with us, an amazing warrior. 30 years ago tonight, she had a night to remember in a bad way. She attended an LSU football game as a 19-year-old sophomore. LSU that night thrashed Rice at Tiger Stadium 57-6, with Tommy Hodson having a big night at quarterback. And after the game, Karen and her boyfriend went to the old Tabby's Blues Box, a historic musical location on North Boulevard, and it didn't turn out well. She's here to talk about then and now and more about what's happened in the last 30 years. But Karen, rather than having me detail what happened, what do you recall about the night of September 19th, 1987, 30 years ago?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me. I remember the whole day very vividly, thinking about, I was moving into a new apartment that day, and we had plans to go to the football game, and then Mike, my boyfriend, Mike Shacatano, had plans to go play a little bit at Tabby's Blues Box after the game. So we drove over there and went in and played music. He played music. I listened, and then we went back to the car to go home, and my window had been smashed in on the driver's side. The next thing I knew, we were kind of tending to that. Someone came up from behind me with, grabbed my shoulders, hit me over the head with a gun, took my purse with my $2 in it. And then Mike was on the other side of the car, and there was a kid that put a gun to Mike's head at the same time. And he grabbed for the gun to get it away from his temple. And the kid on that side of the car screamed to his friend, "Shoot him, Dodie, shoot him." Probably meaning for him to shoot Mike, because Mike was getting away from him, because he already had my purse and my money at that point. But the first thing he did was put the gun in my back and pull the trigger, and then shot twice towards Mike, missed him. And then people started coming out of the bar, and the two assailants ran away. And Mike walked over to me to see if I was okay. And it took a minute, because it was the shock of the bullet going in that caused the swelling, which caused the severing of the cord. So there was a couple of seconds where I stood and then collapsed, but not really paying attention to my legs, because I had a punctured lung and it was difficult to breathe. So,
but this left you unable to walk?
Yeah, paralyzed, complete paralysis from the T10 level, and had received 8 units of blood that night. And had a punctured lung, which hurt. A chest tube is more painful than being shot, I believe.
Well, Karen's had an amazing life, and we're going to talk with her in our time this morning about what happened 30 years ago and what's happened since. 877-217-5757. And appropriately, our first caller from Atlanta is none other than Mike Shacatano. Mike was the boyfriend who was with Karen on that night. And Mike, I'm sure this moment in time is as vivid to you as it is to Karen.
Yeah, hey, Jim, how are you?
Fine.
Yeah, it certainly is. Every year we kind of touch base and probably can't believe how much time has gone by, you know, from that horrific incident that night.
You're tied together forever by what happened that night, and it's nice that you have stayed in contact with one another. You dated several years after the incident, didn't you?
We did, Karen. I think it was probably 6 or 7 years. You know,
it was five. Post. Two before and five after.
Yeah, there you go. But, we did. I mean, you know, we were kids when this happened, and it's almost the night you lose your innocence, because it's just something so horrific that happens. You don't really know how to deal with it, you know, especially at that age. And but I think we did a really good job trying to get back into, you know, the swing of things of school and such. I mean, obviously it didn't happen overnight. We had to go through a tremendous amount of, you know, rehab and, you know, just getting Karen well, you know, all that too.
Well, is there any
or moving forward
guilt, if you will, that you got away unscathed and Karen was wounded in such a dramatic way?
You know, it's something that you live with your whole life. Part of the reason you go back and you think, geez, if I hadn't done this or done that, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, when somebody comes behind you with a gun, you react however you're going to react. And I didn't even know there was somebody by Karen. I just thought somebody was kind of robbing me and had a gun to my head. And so when I pulled that away and then I heard them scream, you know, shooting, I turned around and I saw that there was somebody there. You know, it was just an incredible split decision moment of what you're going to do. And, you know, not knowing that she got shot at that point, the whole thing, the way it unfolded, was just something that you relive over and over again. Now, geez.
All right. Well, you're fading on us just a bit with our cell connection from Atlanta, Mike. But she's been an amazing testament to resilience and courage since that night. I think probably in a way that is as profound or more so than if it had never happened.
Well, and I think so. And I think the one thing about Karen is her spirit. And ever since the day that this has happened, the most positive thing about Karen is she has always looked forward and never looked backwards. She has built her life, you know, to where she is now, with never going through it saying, why me, why me? She accepted that, you know, from the day it happened. And, you know, the biggest thing Karen did while this had happened was we had all these people around her were unhappy, and she was trying to tell everybody it's okay. You know, while she's taking care of herself, she's also was taking care of us. And that really is a testament to who she is and the kind of person that she's built, you know, her life into.
Well, thank you for calling in and sharing the story, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Mike.
Thank you, guys.
Shakitano, son of the former wrestling coach at LSU, Larry Shakitano. Now, I have a note here that was written by one of the witnesses that night, a gentleman named Terrell Holmes, who now lives in Kentucky. He says, I was at Tabby's Blues Box that night when Karen was shot. I was a college student studying engineering at Southern University. It's funny how some deeds in life lead to other things. I work at an aluminum rolling mill in Kentucky where I'm also on the alert team as EMT to be first responder to accidents on the job. I often wondered what Karen's fate was after that night. I walked out of the club to see this beautiful girl laying on the ground, helpless, not knowing her or never having any EMT training. If she remembers, I'm the one who ran to my dad's TV service van and dug out a thick, yellow, rubber construction worker raincoat and covered her up to keep her warm. Do you recall that?
I do remember somebody covering me. There's a lot of people came out of the bar and were standing around in a circle and that were telling me to, because I felt like I could lose consciousness, and yelling at me to stay awake. And then I do remember somebody covering me. It's an amazing, there was an article written in the paper, and it was probably about 15 years ago. I spoke at a school about the incident, and he saw the article in the paper and sent that letter in to my friend. And he went on to get that EMT training because he said he never wanted to be in a situation again where he didn't know what to do. And he was also upset by the fact that at the time he didn't realize, and neither did I, but that the police have to secure the scene, the crime scene, mm-hmm. prior to any medical people being able to come on the scene. So he was upset that the ambulance didn't come right up, that they shut their lights off, and he later learned, you know, that police had to arrive first. So I was lucky in waiting for that I didn't bleed to death.
Yeah, you bled quite a bit. At any point, did you think that you were going to die?
Oh, yes. I was pretty sure of it, and I had said my prayers, and the Lord's Prayer is what came to mind, and I was thinking about my parents and my family, how sad they would be. But I fought. I did fight to stay conscious all the way through the getting them putting me in the ambulance and the ambulance ride and to the trauma center. at Our Lady of the Lake. I remember the chest tube being put in and all of that. So,
when did you realize you were paralyzed?
A few days later, when I could breathe.
Yeah.
The doctors came in and said that told my parents if I made it through the first 48 hours, if I lived, that I would be paralyzed from the waist down. And I believe it was one of the neurosurgeons came in and said that I would never walk again.
And how did you respond?
Disbelief, tears. Yeah.
You were 19. That's hard to accept at any age, but you've had a successful life, and we're going to talk about that when we return, including a mother of three children. We'll talk with Karen Roy. Your number is 877-217-5757. Back after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Eakster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Emily Gunn is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757, and you can send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. Karen Roy is with us 30 years ago tonight, September 19th, 1987. She was shot as a 19-year-old sophomore outside Tabby's Blues Box, a legendary night spot in Baton Rouge that is no longer open on North Boulevard. First time you'd ever been there, right?
Yeah, first time. Mike was a musician. They were in a band, so I went wherever he went. That was the first time I'd ever actually been there. But I knew that lots of people went, all ages. There was a lot about that evening that made me not want to go. Was concerned about the neighborhood. Had a really bad haircut. I was tired from moving into my apartment. So had a lot of reasons why I didn't want to go. And I do tell people, like, if you have that gut feeling about not doing something, don't do it. Because there was a lot in me that was screaming not to go. But I did anyway.
And you were almost killed, had a long comeback, but it didn't stop you from living a normal life.
Nope. I went back to school, I believe it was the next semester, because that was the beginning of my sophomore year. So I think it was in the fall that I took 6 hours of classes, but I still was in a lot of physical therapy. I finished my undergrad in psychology at LSU. And then I had my first baby, got married, had a baby, then got my master's degree in social work, and then had two more babies.
That's fabulous. Mm-hmm. So 2 degrees and 3 kids.
Yeah.
That's absolutely wonderful. And I would think that there was great concern that you could not have children.
That was one of the first questions I asked the doctor when they said I would never walk again is, can I still have kids? And they were adamantly that it was not a problem. To not think that I couldn't get pregnant because I would and did. And then I had really fairly uncomplicated pregnancies. They were worried about a lot of different things, delivering prematurely and that sort of thing. But everybody was healthy. They were a little early, but they were healthy. And
turned out okay.
Yeah.
You're an exceptionally beautiful person in many ways, but physically as well.
And you've had to
work very hard, haven't you? You're definitely into the physical therapy aspect of this.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I learned when I was in rehab in Mississippi Methodist about a bicycle that uses electrical stimulation to contract the muscle groups that your brain would normally contract when you're riding a bicycle. So it gives electrical stimulation to those muscle groups, therefore keeping muscle tone on my legs, preventing wounds by increasing circulation and keeping some muscle tone on my glutes, quads, and hamstrings. So, and then a good cardiovascular workout as well. The standing part is also key to being healthy. And I think the medical community has long ignored that fact. But after 30 years of spinal cord injury, because I've been standing, I've had no contractures, no wounds. I have better than average bone density for an injury of my age. So my next kind of era of my life, I will spend trying to push forward these preventative measures that are that have been there mm-hmm. around for 30 years.
So when you work out, you actually stand?
Yeah, I have. It started off with braces that I had when I was first injured, and I've always had those, tried to stand with those. I've demoed some of these robotic devices. I have a standing frame, and most recently, the company that I work for, New Motion, we're selling a standing robotic device that I got mine 2 weeks ago. It was they're made in Turkey, and I am like scooting all around my house standing up now, which is amazing.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. And you're a testament to survival, resilience. This is something that would not have happened if not for this. But at times, do you still, as humans do, say, why me?
No. You know, I get frustrated when it's a difficult day. If I've been in and out of the car 8 times with my job as a territory manager, and it's 100 degrees, and my shoe falls off, and, you know, I might get frustrated, but I'm way past the why me stage. And I didn't stay in it very long because it's not productive.
And you basically go anywhere you want to go.
I'm all over the place. I was 2 weeks in Europe over the summer with my daughter and a girlfriend of mine and her daughter. And we were in Paris, Florence, Rome, and Athens. We got to the top of the Acropolis, like the top.
Yeah.
And then I travel for work over, like, pretty much from Baton Rouge all the way over to Pensacola, Jackson, Mississippi, mm-hmm. West Monroe. So, yeah, I'm not still much.
How was it learning how to drive?
I found it pretty easy. It's very simple hand control that you push down for the gas and back for the brake. And I'm left-handed. That might help. But I think it's easy.
And an obvious question from a listener, what happened to the guy who shot you?
We had a trial. They caught him, I guess, about a week after the shooting, because his two friends that had helped him plan the robbery, the guy who put the gun to Mike's head and the lookout, turned themselves in for a plea bargain. So the shooter got 248 years in Angola, 2 counts of armed robbery, attempted second-degree murder.
Still there.
And yeah. He's my age, exactly. We're both 49.
Okay. 877-217-5757 for Karen Fernbaugh Roy, Stewart in Baton Rouge. Stewart, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Jim, Karen, and your audience. Karen, what I can't think of a superlative to share how wonderful your story is and how uplifting and refreshing it is, particularly when you take into consideration all of the tumult, hate, and horrible things that are going on in our society. You go, girl, and keep going, and continue to be upliftment to the remainder of us.
Thank you, Stuart. I'm honored to hear you say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. Appreciate your kind words. Now, when you returned to campus, how was that experience?
Mortifying. I was absolutely scared to death. I had tried to go through Rush the year before, and it was a complete nightmare. Got cut from most of the sororities that I wanted to get into. Yeah. And quit like halfway through Rush. And so I felt like a complete reject anyway. And then to go back to school in the wheelchair, I knew that everyone was going to be staring at me. Now, my dad bought me a red BMW convertible, which made it easier. I hate to say that.
Yeah.
But when you drive up in that car, you can just pretend everybody's staring at your car.
Yeah.
And not
okay.
you.
Okay. I like that.
But, you know, Mike was by my side through that period of time because he would meet me at my car. We were both in school, and he kind of was my security blanket for a while, getting to class and getting around campus. And then you kind of get used to it.
Well, you didn't have the handicapped access then that we have now.
Oh, my goodness,
that must have been a nightmare as well.
Yeah, it was tough. We actually had actual books, like huge books, that were in my backpack on the back of the chair. And then a lot of times they just put a board over the steps. So the slope was incredibly steep.
Terrible.
The doors are very heavy. But there was always somebody kind of there that would see me start to open the door. Somebody would open the door and give me a shove up. So, yeah.
Well, people are generally nice, but you found out that on the night of September 19th, 1987, some people are not nice, and sometimes there are lasting implications to their actions. And they're basically just wrong place, wrong time kind of thing.
Yeah, I was a pretty, I'm not a huge risk taker. I didn't walk on the wild side. You know, I was, right, exactly the wrong place at the wrong time. But it's created the life that I have now, and I have three beautiful children. I have a job that I love, and I have purpose, and I'm just happy, happy girl.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Karen Roy, and also are slated to hear from Joyce Walker, the leading scorer in the history of LSU women's basketball, to be inducted in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame Friday night. We'll talk more after this pause for the news. Your number is 877-217-5757. Karen Henderson is next with the news on WRKN. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757, locally 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, and our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. A few more minutes with Karen Roy, and we are slated in the back half of the hour to hear from none other than Joyce Walker, leading scorer in the history of LSU women's basketball. Here's an email from David saying, inspirational. Her first semester at LSU seems to have been my last, but I do not recall hearing about this horrible shooting. I think about all the steps into the buildings, Allen Hall. For instance, she walked in and then took three steps up. That's changed. Mm-hmm. But it was tough to navigate, and you've beaten the odds more times than not and have had a full life. Now, your degrees in psychology and social work, were they related to what happened to you that night?
Yes, I believe so. I thought about law school. I think that anything that directly dealt with people, I'm a people person. So psychology might have been my undergrad choice before the shooting, but social work was definitely affected by the fact that I thought I could help other people navigating through life after a disability. I could use that to help someone.
All right. This is from John in New Roads. He says, I'm far more surprised that I haven't been shot more times. I know he has, like you, survived a shooting. We live in a violent community, and that has to be troubling, that this, unfortunately, can and will happen to some people.
Yeah. I mean, there's all different ways of becoming disabled, but, the 30 years ago, this wasn't as common. It was quite outrageous. People assumed that it happened to me in New Orleans and not in Baton Rouge. So, but now I know it's all too common. And I've met several people lately through a peer mentoring program that I do with United Spinal Association. Mm-hmm. And several of them were victims of gunshots.
Well, we had an incident last Thursday night. Donald Smart, 49-year-old, 20-year employee of Louis, walking to work for his overnight shift as a dishwasher, and he was shot and killed on Alaska Street, a block from LSU, and people were up in arms, and for good reason. In the next 30 years, what do you think the advances will be in the technology? You've come a long way since 1987, but in 30 years, do you think that it'll zoom upward and onward and make things much better for people who've had the kinds of situations you're in?
Absolutely. The robotics, which I was talking about, the TEK robotic mobility device that I have, is going to become much more commonplace. So standing is key to benefiting from any stem cell implantation that's happening. So now they've learned that embryonic stem cells cause tumor growth. So using stem cells from your own behind your nose and that part of your brain can become any kind of cell you want it to. So if they go back and re-injure the spinal cord by cutting away the scar tissue, they can implant stem cells from your own body that are not rejected over time and become nerves and regenerate themselves. So there's tons of things happening, and who knows, maybe even I will benefit from it before I leave this earth.
Well, thank you for telling your story, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Inspiring the rest of us. Yeah, Karen Fernbaugh Roy, who has a smile that lights up every room and has been on top of the world despite being unable to walk for the past 30 years ago tonight.
Thank you, Jim.
My pleasure. Joyce Walker is with us, the former LSU basketball great, joining us from Seattle. She'll be in Baton Rouge in a few days to be inducted into the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. And good morning to you, Joyce Walker, early in Seattle, Washington.
Good morning to you as well, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to talk with you. And you have had quite a voyage in life. In order to be in the LSU Hall of Fame, in most cases you have to have a degree from LSU, and yours came a little late in life, didn't it?
Came a little late. I had some other certifications, but you know what? That was always a dream of mine. And 10 years ago, I got that done, and I'm just delighted to be coming back to what I consider my second home.
877-217-5757. In the early 1980s, Joyce Walker played for Sue Gunner and averaged 25 points a game. She still holds the LSU records, 2,906 points. And she had quite a pro career as well, including a stint with the Harlem Globetrotters. How did that happen, Joyce?
Well, after it's been a couple years, over in Italy, we got a call that they were adding a woman to the team. And, you know, I've been playing with guys all my life. So, you know, it seemed like a natural fit for me. And I went to the tryout and, you know, it was me and Lynette Woodard, the great from Kansas. And it ended up being, you know, her, then me. And, you know, it was just it was a electric time, amazing time to be considered a part of the team that's known as the Ambassadors of Goodwill. It just was, I'll never forget it.
When you were at LSU, you used to play with the guys, didn't you?
I played with them all the time. The field house was a very special place. I don't even know if the field house is still there. I'm not sure. I was back there in 2009, and I don't remember. But the field house with Cookie Jackson and some of those guys, Howard Kellogg, you know, those were my guys.
And you used to beat the guys.
I used to get at them now. You know, God gave me some exceptional talent. And I just loved everything about the game, particularly the competition. You know, we would play one-on-one, and they'd beat me, and I'd say, let's play again. You know, it was one of those things where they were my greatest teacher.
Well, you have abilities that are special, whether it's a man or woman, anybody. Joyce Walker is one of the best natural basketball players of all time. How did you develop those abilities, or were they just innate?
Well, I come from an athletic family, but I just put the work in. You know, I had a younger brother when I was about 8, and his assignment, he was a year younger than me, there was 10 of us. His assignment was to let me tag along with him. That's what Mom said. And so we ended up at the YMCA, probably about a block and a half from my house, and, you know, from the very beginning, he picked me first. I mean, I was the fastest, but I didn't necessarily have the skill. But there was something about it when your brother picked you first. And from that day to this day, you know, I just worked on it. Just worked on it. Got my shot block. Got my shot block. Got my nose bloodied. You know, I got a whole bunch of stuff. But it taught me to be precise in my craft. Because when you're playing against boys, there's a different rhythm.
You certainly didn't shy away from the physical aspect of the game.
No. In fact, when you play with guys, you got to get into them and make contact with them. So I was able to, you know, kind of contort my body. I learned a lot of little simple moves in the game. So I'd rather go to you than allow you to crowd me as a basketball player. So contact was a good friend of mine.
56% shooting percentage. Now, that's amazing for a guard. You could put the ball in the basket.
Yeah, you know what? I had a coach in high school. His name is Frank Ahern, and he's no less than a saint in the annals of basketball here in Washington. But he would always talk about, let's take a good shot versus just taking a shot. And he taught me how to watch video, you know, when I was his 10th grader, you know, and so I could see my body, so I could see, you know, what the best shot would be or what my release points were. And I just really believe in the fundamental part of the game. And I wanted to score, but I wanted a good shot. So I always look for those. I never shot the three-point shot, The year after I left, they put in 85, they put the 3-point shot in. But I was a 15 to, you know, 18, 20 footer.
Yeah, you could have had a higher average if you'd had a 3-point shot, no doubt about it. How did you end up at LSU, having been a big star in Seattle at Garfield High? How did you end up coming to Baton Rouge?
Well, I have to say I had a lot of pressure from University of Washington to stay home. But back then, the best basketball was being played in the SEC. You know, the Tennessees, the Georgias, the Mississippi States, all those programs. Because I study, like, where's the best basketball at? And but there's this wonderful guy named, was my coach, Christy Christensen. Coach Christy Christensen was assistant coach at LSU, and he recruited me in a real persistent manner. In fact, you know, my mom kind of fell for him too, because he'd show up. He must have made 6 or 8 trips to Seattle. But the thing that was the kicker is, I'm at my senior dance, and in walks Coach Christy. My senior year, and I have a picture still of that, of him coming right on in there, we dancing, and, you know, I felt like he promised my mom it would be a home environment where I could have a lot of support, and it'd be a good fit. And plus, the main reason for LSU is that I wanted to come and build something special.
Well, you did that, and you played for Sue Gunter, who was a legendary coach. How was that experience?
Tough. Coach Gunter was all about the grit and the grind. You know, she had high expectations. When I loafed, I got consequences. When I didn't bring my best, I had consequences. But all the time, I always knew that she loved me, that she wanted the best for me. And she says, Walker, that's what she called me, Walker, you got the best talent on this team, so I need you to set the tempo. And I just believed her. I believed that she cared enough about all of us that if we didn't bring our best, well, what was the point of showing up? So rest in peace, Coach G. But I loved her infectious personality, but she was very driven.
Your number is 877-217-5757 and 297-5633 locally in Baton Rouge. Joyce Walker is in Seattle, her hometown, where she is a coach right now. But she'll be coming to Baton Rouge in a few days to accept the honor of joining the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame, the leading scorer in LSU women's basketball history. Only Pete Maravich scored more points at LSU than did Joyce Walker. We'll be back after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thanks for being with us. Emily Gunn is producing, and our special guest for the final segment is Joyce Walker, leading scorer in the history of LSU women's basketball, and played for the Harlem Globetrotters. Do we have some sweet Georgia Brown, Emily Gunn? I'm sure you've heard this a few times when you're warming up with the Globetrotters. As we know, there haven't been many women to play with the Harlem Globetrotters, but Joyce Walker was one of those who played and did so with great success.
Thank you very much, folks. We won't keep it rolling. It's time for our Planet Man, Joe Darrenberg.
All right. Well, let's wait until we get Sweet Georgia Brown. I'm not sure what that is, but Joyce Walker, you had to be somewhat intimidated. I think that would be human nature when you joined the Globetrotters.
No, I wasn't intimidated. What it was I needed to learn. I needed to learn our schemes, you know, our tricks, and see what they did to you when you were a rookie. They would put you in the shower, not with the shower on, so you could tear the paper and get ready for the show. You had to do all the things led up to the show until you begin to perfect what the, you know, the magic circle was, what actual part of the show I was going to partake in. So, you know, it was like anything else. It was always initiation. But I loved that thing called competition.
Yeah, but when you're with the Globetrotters, you don't lose very often, do you?
No, you don't lose very often. You know, but I tell you, people think it's an easy thing. There's a lot of work that goes into the show. And some of our practices with the generals were really extremely tough because they didn't lose all the time. You know, and sometimes they were ahead in the game, and so we'd have to stop the show, do a little skit, and then catch up. So, you know, they were professionals as well.
Now, the process for joining that team must have been quite rigorous.
It was extremely rigorous. It was a major tryout. They brought in about probably 30 of us women, and we had to practice with the guys. You know, we had to earn our own way. And I remember some of the practices were hard as some of the national teams I played on, you know, being with, you know, Sue and being with Pat Head Summit. Now, you want to talk about a practice? I've never been in a tough practice than with the late Pat Head Summit.
Well, when you came out on the court, I'm sure if many fans thought, well, you know, here's a girl. She's not going to be anywhere in the same league with these Globetrotters. But you were a better player than most, if not all of them, weren't you?
You know, I held my own. And then that second year with them, Nancy Lieberman joined the Generals. Now, that's a name for you. Nancy was a was a phenomenal basketball player at Old Dominion. And me and Nancy would go at it. And so if I had the ball, I was going at Nancy. We might have been calling the play. We wouldn't call that play that possession. You know, I'm going to the basket. I'm scoring a bucket or something. So, you know, it's just knowing where you fit in. And the guys are great. They really took the extra time to teach me.
Now, like most people in life, your trajectory hasn't been a straight line. You had some challenges. You've talked about your addictions. Those are under control, but that was quite a challenge at one point in life, wasn't it?
Absolutely, it was. You know, drinking, you know, and using other chemicals, marijuana. I had to learn. I had to decide. You know, but I think that sometimes when you go through really tough things, see, here's what I believe. Everything I had to get to the other side, I got as a young girl being taught by the people in my community and by all my coaches. Because it's the same application, right? The same application is simply this. You know, you go back to work, you get honest about it, you ask for help, and you clean up the wreckage of your past, and then you make a commitment to help somebody else along the way. And so I'm grateful today for that, for I have some freedom in my life. On a scale I've never had. But when you're in it, you don't know that. You don't know that. But thank God I knew how to make friends along the way. I knew how to be kind along the way, because when I needed the very help, people showed up and helped me.
You were friends with Dale Brown, who was, of course, the coach of the men's team when you were at LSU. You've kept that friendship through the years, haven't you?
I have. Dale Brown's amazing. When I was ready to go back to school, I called him. In fact, he was in Seattle at that precise moment. I don't think things happen by mistake. That's kind of like my belief. He's in town. We connect. He says, what do you want? And this is 10 years ago, almost to the day. I said, Dale, I want to go back to school. You know, he says, okay, well, call my foundation. And the rest is history. I had about a year and a quarter to finish school. And through his foundation, I was able to go back and finish, and what a gift that was. When we talk, we email, because he's the email king, right?
Yeah.
So we keep a lot of connection, and I can't wait to see my friend.
Well, how tough was it going back to school after all these years?
Well, actually, I was smarter. You know, I don't know if I was smarter, but I had matured enough to really apply. It was hard. You know, it was hard, especially so when I got to like the algebra one and the trigonometry, I had to shut my life down for like 6 weeks. And I needed tutors. I had my niece tutoring me. I had friends tutoring me because I didn't know what a polynomial was, to be quite frankly honest with you. I just, you know, people came along and helped me grasp and understand it. That was the hardest part of going back to school, the math. But the rest of it, you know, I consider myself pretty creative, and I like aspect of psychology and what that means to the human spirit, the human mind, you know. So I got all A's and B's. So something was working.
That sounds like it. And you're a coach now.
Actually, I am. I retired from Garfield, so I don't actually coach anymore, but I run my own program where I train up a lot of the top kids from the area. I do a lot of small group training, individual training, but I also run my own foundation where it's called Rejoice Academy, where we use sports to teach summer programming, to teach robotics. You know, we're doing some STEM stuff right now, so I'm very excited about that.
Rejoice Academy.
Rejoice Fundamentals Academy.
Right.
You can check us out on Facebook. Yeah, we have Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing that for about 4 years, and because I really believe very few of us are going to the next level, you know, with the sport. But we need, our kids need the sciences, and they need it in an applicable way that it starts to make sense for them.
Well, I hear you can still play.
Yeah, I'm a ringer now. I can knock it down. I got a new knee and a new hip, so we ain't doing much up and down the court. But if I'm open, you can best believe it's going in.
In the day, could you dunk the ball?
I tried to dunk it one time and fell on my behind, but I got up there.
I bet you did.
Got up there, yes.
What's your most memorable experience at LSU?
My most memorable experience is really not playing basketball. It's my senior year when my parents finally came down, got flown in to watch me play. You know, they had other kids. They were raising my other siblings, and they were hardworking people, never missed a day at work. And for them to be in the gym watching their daughter play for the first time since I left Seattle, I think that's one of my most memorable times. But not only because they were there, I was like smoking hot that game. I think I probably had a triple double, right? Right. It was one of those amazing games.
Mm-hmm.
That's really memorable. And having them see the campus where I was, and having them see what their daughter was pursuing.
Who's the best player you ever played against?
The best player I ever played against is Edwards. Well, the best player that defended me the best, here's what I'll say, is Edwards that played at Georgia. And for the life of me, I cannot.
Teresa Edwards.
Teresa, oh, my God. Teresa would make me work as hard as anybody that female that ever defended me. And she'd be, you know, it would make me mad because she'd be giggling at me all the time. She'd be like, no, Joyce Walker, not tonight. You know, I know who you are. She'd make me earn every point. And I love Teresa because she was an amazing defender.
Well, you're an example of basketball's carried you a long way, hasn't it? Without basketball, you wouldn't have had a lot of the experiences you've enjoyed in life.
I think basketball opened my life to a whole different world. I got to travel the world. I got to meet people. I got to gain associations. I got to learn some tough lessons. Basketball's life. You know, the best team doesn't always win. I've been on teams that have been the best that haven't always won. And I've been on teams that maybe we weren't the best, but we found a way to win. You know, nothing's given. And that's what I try to teach my kids today, right? Nothing's given. You can't walk in here and expect to be great. You got to be, and the game has humbled me too, but life has humbled me too. But they're very similar in the way that we can learn.
Well, Joyce Walker, congratulations on your induction in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. And there have been some exceptions, but in most cases you have to have that degree to get in. And Joyce came back in her 50s and got her degree. And by golly, she is in the Hall of Fame, and we're right where she should be. And we look forward to seeing you in Baton Rouge. Thank you, Joyce.
Thanks so much, Jim. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye. And we'll be back tomorrow. Former Governor Buddy Romer will be one of our guests. He's written a book about his early experiences in life, Scopina. Until then, for Emily, I'm Jim. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.